Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 6th of July. Monday at 9 is All Things Political, and there is much to discuss. The announcement by Sarah Palin on Friday that she is going to be leaving her position to effect positive change outside government. Al Franken is now a United States senator from Minnesota. The president is in Moscow looking at nuclear arms reduction. The economy and unemployment is now at 9.5%. So we'll be talking about jobs this hour as well. Mark Sanford from South Carolina, he's kind of receded from the headlines as a result of Sarah Palin's announcement. All that and more this hour. And our guest is Professor Joseph Kunkel III. He's a professor and chair in the political science department at Minnesota State University at Mankato. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And our email address, if you'd like to send one of those, is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Professor Joseph Kunkel, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. And we also will talk some about Robert McNamara, who died today as well. Let's start with Sarah Palin resigning and her announcement that she's going to effect positive change outside government. Why do you think she did this?
Well, if I knew, I'd be one of the few people in the country that could figure it out.
Yeah.
It seems people are dividing into two camps. Either she's driven her career up on the rocks and is really getting out of politics, or else this is a crafty move to run for president and make a lot of money in the meantime. I think generally a lot of Republicans seem to be confused about it and don't think it's really a great career move.
Right. It was a very unusual press conference, wasn't it? I thought she was going to maybe announce that she was going to be head of the National Right to Life organization or something, but it never went anywhere. And so everybody speculated, as you just did now, that she stands to make a lot of money here.
It was an odd press conference, and that's part of the problem is we're a little bit too used to odd press conferences from Sarah Palin.
Right.
But she was essentially announcing that she was quitting before her term as governor was up. But yet, then oddly, she was justifying this as somehow self-sacrificing and also good for the people of Alaska, that she's not going to be like other politicians who milk their lame duck status. So it may be that she's sick of the media attention. She's kind of isolated up there in Alaska and has a lot of invitations to come down to the lower 48 and appear to Republican gatherings and write her memoirs and maybe run for president. She thought, I can't do both of these, and I'm too big a salmon for Alaska right now.
Too big a salmon. Well, good luck running for president. That's what I say here. I don't know how she can do it.
Yeah, I think that she has a lot of support in the base of the Republican Party, but she just hasn't really got her chops as far as being a national politician. She didn't really establish her credibility as a national leader. John McCain kind of picked her out of obscurity, and she wasn't quite up to the task. So I think she'd have some support in the Republican Party, but she's going to have to get some serious advisors who know how to run for president and not just be talking around the kitchen
right.
table with her husband and her high school buddies.
Yeah, exactly. Al Franken is going to the U.S. Senate. Took a while, huh, from your state?
Yeah, it took a while. The election was virtually tied. On election night, Senator Coleman was thought to be a few hundred votes ahead, and then we had basically a three-step process of a recount run by what we call State Canvassing Board, which is a few elected officials and then some judges. And then Franken came out ahead on that, and then Coleman appealed that into the state courts. And that took some time, and then the state courts ruled in Franken's favor. Franken picked up votes each stage. And then just last week, the Supreme Court of Minnesota ruled in Franken's favor. 312 votes he won by out of almost 3 million cast, and Senator Coleman hung it up at that point.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? 312 votes.
Yeah, that's closest in Minnesota, I think. And I think it just goes to show that the election process is just not perfect. And, when it gets to be so close, there's just mistakes and there's things that get called into question. And then you pull these election lawyers are a fierce breed, and you get them involved. And it creates a lot of uncertainty about what happened. But I think generally people are going to be satisfied that it's over one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, you obviously saw a lot of the campaign here that mm-hmm. went on and on. Do you have any idea what kind of senator he would be? It's a very unusual background, isn't it, for becoming a senator?
Well, it is. It's an unusual background, you know, having been a comedy writer and a comedian on television, and then writing these satirical books, and then basically trying to be the Rush Limbaugh of the left on this talk radio Air America.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to be a senator like that, really. He was disappointingly boring in the campaign.
Oh, no.
And, I think he's grown up as a professional satirist, you know, maybe the class clown when he was in school.
Uh-huh.
But he's put that on hold, and he wants to be a very serious person. And, you know, a lot of the jokes that he's made in the past came back to haunt him in the campaign. So I think he's going to be a rather quiet, serious, and hardworking person to start out with. Anyway, I think one thing that people miss in this a little bit is the role that the inspiration of Paul Wellstone, the Minnesota senator, fiery populist, who died in a plane crash shortly before the election. That's how Norm Coleman was elected in the first place. And Wellstone's example and his death, I think, played a big part in many progressives in Minnesota redoubling their efforts and trying to become really committed to politics. And I think Al Franken is one of these guys that it was after Wellstone's death, I think, that he decided to make a turn to politics. And he's going to have Wellstone's desk now in the Senate that they've saved that desk for him. And
oh, have they?
I think he's going to try to push those liberal issues, but in a much more more of a workhorse way rather than a show horse. He said that he's going to try to follow the Hillary Clinton model as a celebrity who went into the Senate, but basically didn't give a lot of speeches or grab a lot of headlines at the beginning, but just tried to work hard and gain respect of colleagues.
Did he say that he's lost his sense of humor?
I think he might have said that. I think he tries very hard to put it on hold. There was one incident in the campaign where he kind of let it get out that he was bantering with some a college Republican at an event, a student, and was ridiculing this guy a little bit and received some bad publicity for that. So I think he probably still has a sense of humor, but he's going to be very careful about letting it show.
Unemployment, 9.5%. The vice president saying the economy probably worse than we thought it was. Is the stimulus package too small? Does this have to be revised? That's such a high unemployment rate.
I'm surprised that they're surprised, or that they're saying they're surprised, because the economists have been saying all along that even after the economy starts to improve, unemployment will probably continue to rise, because unemployment is the lagging indicator, as they say. It's kind of the last thing to improve. I think the expectation has been for quite a while that unemployment's going to go 10% or above. And so I don't know if Joe Biden's rash of statements this weekend if he's supposed to be out there saying this through the administration, or if it's typical Joe Biden foot-in-the-mouth disease.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we are going to have a revision of the package in order to put more people back at work, more of a WPA kind of program?
I wonder if there is. I don't think there's that much stomach in Congress for another big stimulus bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think certain economists would think that it would be necessary and thought that the first stimulus was pretty small, but it was, maybe it wasn't big enough, but it was pretty darn big. And so I think we're going to have competing needs if there is a need for more stimulus. But that's competing with rising concern about the deficits.
And now yet another huge issue, the president in Moscow trying to work on some kind of new arms reduction treaty. He's really playing out on an international stage on all kinds of huge issues, isn't he?
Oh, and by the way, there's Russia.
Yeah, right.
and this is between the United States and Russia. This is where, 90% of the nuclear weapons in the world are. So this is still very important, but you look at all the international issues that the president's having to deal with, and then all these domestic issues too. It's quite staggering what the president has to do in these circumstances, and then some of the things that he's choosing to do.
Do you think there's a good chance that he will be able to negotiate some kind of new arms reduction treaty?
Well, I think that's in the early stages right now, and we'll have to see. He hasn't really shown his hand on the missile defense program and the placing of these installations in Eastern Europe, which is probably going to be the first thing that the Russians are going to want. So he hasn't really said whether he would step back from that Bush administration policy as far as building a missile defense shield. It's quite provocative to the Russians to have the U.S. Putting these things in Poland and in Eastern European countries.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. It's All Things Political this hour. Professor Joseph Kunkel III, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Minnesota State University in Mankato, is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address, talk@wpr.org, and we'll be with you in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now at 800-486-8655. Michael from Madison is our first caller. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Kathleen. I don't even know where to start, but I'll just start at the top. I'll just run down, okay? I find it very offensive that Governor Sarah Palin, your attacks on Governor Sarah Palin, your little puns, you say, using the term salmon, talking negative about the fact that she may go out and make a bunch of money, like only Republicans go out and make a bunch of money. I never hear you saying a word about when a Democrat politician makes a bunch of money, such as the Obamas and the money he made off his books. Also, going down to the fact that you're asking a poli-sci chairman at a college in Minnesota about economics and asking him directly, should we add more money to the stimulus package? Are you kidding me? This guy has no idea about economics. He has no idea about business, taxes, and you're asking questions like that?
Wait a second. How do you know he doesn't? He's a political science professor. Of course he's going to know about the economy.
He comes back and gives you an answer.
Pardon,
That's
Michael?
That's the arrogance of the liberals.
What do you think about Sarah Palin quitting her job in the middle of the job?
Oh, really? Well, here's the good thing about, at least you didn't have to quit it like the governor of New York did when he was caught with a bunch of sexual, or with with a bunch of prostitutes, right? She quit her job. She left her job because liberals like you have been attacking her, and it was going to cost over $500,000 of Alaskan government's money, Alaskan taxpayers' money, just to defend these stupid lawsuits that people like you are bringing on to her, okay? The fact is, Sarah Palin is going to be the president in 2012. Get ready for it, baby. We conservatives, not Republicans, okay, are going to run it down your all's throats. And you're going to pay for these 4 years of socialism that you're putting on us right now. You are taxing us to the death. It's happening. Sarah Palin will come back like a vengeance. And liberals like this professor in Minnesota, you can sit back. Oh, by the way, professor, how dare you sit...
All right, we got your point here. Professor Kunkel, would you like to respond?
Well, it's happy to be on the Ideas Network. We get plenty of ideas.
We get plenty of ideas, yeah. Well, we'll mark your words and see if she becomes president in 2012.
I'll just answer the questions that you ask. If you ask me about Democrats, I'll tell you about Democrats, too.
Yeah, we're talking about Sarah Palin. It's sort of hard to wave everybody else in. What about his point, which is the only one I'd like to respond to, that, you know, the liberal media is on her. She can't stand the attacks. And she's made reference to this, too, that she's not been treated fairly by the press. They're on her. It's a vendetta against Sarah Palin, et cetera.
Well, for sure she has not got favorable coverage by the media, and the media probably does have liberal inclinations, but she's given them plenty to work with.
All right, let's go to Karen from Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm calling. I think the professor was spot on with his analysis of Al Franken's campaign. My husband and I lived in Wisconsin for 33 years and moved to Minnesota to be close to grandchildren. And one of the things that I was sad about leaving in Wisconsin was Russ Feingold as my senator. So when we got here and there was an election coming up, we went to a lot of forums and we met a lot of the candidates. And I was impressed by one thing, particularly about Al Franken, and that was that he really was a listener. And I always admired Senator Feingold for listening to people, but then making his decisions. You know, he had lots of information. And so I decided I would campaign for Al Franken, and I found so many people. I did a lot of door knocking, and I found so many people who were very supportive of President Obama. I've been a Republican my whole life, but I'm voting for Obama this time. Very supportive of our representative in the House of Representatives, Tim Walz. I loved him, Republicans and Democrats. But Al Franken was the one that people had questions about. And I remember saying to my husband, I think this is going to be a really close election.
Little did you know how close.
No, and what I found was that people didn't know that he could be different from what they had seen on television. And I do give him a lot of credit for understanding there is a difference in your behavior when you're a senator and when you're a Saturday Night Live comedian. And he certainly showed a lot of self-control. I think he's going to be a good senator, and I think he's serious about doing this. He probably conducted his campaign more like the Minnesota boy than, you know, the New York comedian who came back to Minnesota. So I think... contrary to what your last caller was talking about, that you've got a wonderful guest on this morning. So
I think he's great,
Jeffrey.
As well. Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, thanks for the call. You want to respond, talk more about Franken, Professor Kunkel?
Well, I think it's interesting that Karen mentions Senator Feingold, because Senator Feingold was also inspired by Paul Wellstone to run, and he got into politics really, kind of with some wacky stunts that were characteristic of Wellstone, such as writing that contract on his garage door.
Right.
And I think he picked up on some of the advertising techniques. So there is a similarity, I think, between these three people. Al Franken has a chance now to establish himself as a senator, but, you know, he almost lost this race. And I think he was one of the few Minnesota Democrats who could lose this race in this year to Norm Coleman. And, you know, with the type of background that he had, you know, in my opinion, as a professional political scientist, he's not really qualified to be a senator. I tend to have the old-fashioned notion that you ought to work your way up dropping literature and serving on the county board and state legislature before you run for the Senate. And professional wrestlers and athletes and comedians ought to establish themselves somewhere else first. So I think he brought a lot of bad, you know, I think he's a very good-hearted person and a serious person, but he brought a lot of baggage to the campaign. And he said a lot of nasty things in his books and over the course of his sarcastic career. And Norm Coleman used those. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason that race was so close. A more mainstream candidate, should have won that race by 8 points. Hmm.
Thanks, Karen, for your call. David is next from Greenbush. Hi, David.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello, Professor. My question is about Sarah Palin and her possible future that I haven't heard anybody talk about. As governor, she's got the messy job of actually governing, having to deal with uncooperative legislatures, being held accountable to the public, and, of course, taking the dreaded shots from the media. I wonder if she hasn't looked at people like Newt Gingrich or Ann Coulter or Rush Limbaugh, where they can actually influence the conservative movement without having to be elected, speak before and sell books to adoring crowds, and make piles of money without actually having to be accountable to anyone. I'd really welcome your comments on that. I'll hang up and listen for it on the air.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, I think David has a good hypothesis there for the route that she might be going. She may not know exactly what she's going to do at this point. She has some opportunities. She has some headaches in Alaska. There's some speculation that, well, maybe there's some problem that she is going to surface that's driving this. But I think that is, that's another option and to kind of go over to the infotainment area. And, you see some of those people thinking about getting into politics, Chris Matthews or Newt Gingrich is threatening to run for president. I think that would be a way to influence American politics from outside government, make some money, and keep her options open.
Mm-hmm. And what about Sanford? Is he going to have to resign? Boy, she hit the stage and he exited pretty fast.
Yeah, it's hard to see how he can how he's going to continue on. I mean, he's embarrassed just about everyone and most of all himself, and then pretty much keeps talking. The public is going to be forgiving up to a point, but people are really, even Republicans are raising questions about his mental state, I think. And so I think I think people are trying to push him out down there. I don't know if they're going to be successful.
He gives a few too many press conferences, don't you think?
Yeah, it talks too much, tells us more than we want to know.
Yeah, he sure does.
And this, I mean, it hurts Republicans, but these type of things I don't really see as partisan because you have Democrats doing similar, similar things. These are some of the oldest sins in the world, and it's pretty nonpartisan in occurrence of those.
Right. Let's go next to Luba from Madison. Hi, Luba.
Good morning. I have one question, but I have some initial comments on Sarah. There's going to be a Senate race up there in a couple of years, and I have a feeling that she may be running for that first before her entry into the presidency. And although she never presents anything particularly solid, and it's all of her comments are pretty much emotional. The previous caller talked about talk show speakers, and they do have tremendous influence, and I think that's going to play very solidly in the race. But my question is, what kind of lawsuits and whatever are floating around up in Alaska and either against the state or Sarah? I'm not sure about anything of that nature.
Mm. I don't have any information on lawsuits that are pending. They're sort of vague, as all these national pundits and politicians are wondering why she did this. There's some wondering if there's something that's out there, but I don't know anything. I have any reason to think that there is. Running for Senate from Alaska would be a good move for Sarah Palin to get her out of Alaska and get her on the national stage and get her some credibility on national issues. She's extremely charismatic person and has a special kind of magic that very few politicians have. But it might have been her misfortune to be raised up just a little bit too quickly before she was really ready for that kind of stage.
It's hard to believe you can run for Senate when you've quit your job as being governor. I don't know how you can do that.
Yeah, I think at this point that it's probably going to create some bad feelings in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that it would have been a good move at some point if she could have made a transition from governor to Senate.
Right. Thanks, Luba, very much for your call. Mark is next from Wauwatosa. Hi, Mark.
Hello there.
Hi.
I've got a question for Professor Kunkel. Wondering if he would address three callers back, the guy that listened to a lot of right-wing talk radio. I've been taking in radio and TV from around the world the last couple of years and have noticed that there's an international organization loosely known as G7, G8, now G20. And it was the G20 that got together and as a worldwide consortium decided the quote-unquote bailout program would be administered worldwide. This wasn't just something that Barack Obama came up with. This was a similar move that has taken place in every major industrialized country in the world, and that's just not something that the caller apparently had heard in his daily activities.
Well, there's not a bailout being administered worldwide. I think there's a Keynesian economic theory that most of the industrialized countries are buying into that in a time of recession and unemployment and low consumption that you have to stimulate the economy by injecting some money in it, and the government is the instrument to do that. I think the European Union is doing it in a more coordinated way. This was one of the issues that came up when President Obama proposed a stimulus plan, though, that they didn't want to cede American sovereignty to these, to international organizations in this respect. So I think it's kind of a common approach. Some are doing it more. So, the Germans may be doing a little bit less. There's no international or worldwide administration of a bailout.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a follow-up, Mark?
Yeah, not that there was a universal law put in place, but what I'm referring to is the fact that the industrialized countries of the world all got together and said in unison, this is the way to attack the problem. I mean, I think Ireland decided not to, but I mean, how many other countries have decided not to do some form of a bailout? Now, I'm not comfortable with the bailout, but I'm just pointing out that if everybody acts in concert, there must be something to this notion that this is the way to go.
Well, I mean, among Keynesian economists, that's pretty much the thinking, that you want to stimulate the economy when you have an economic downturn and worry less about deficits. The alternative would be to just tighten your belt, worry about deficits, and risk a deeper recession.
Thanks very much for the call, Mark. We also had in the last few days, there's so much going on, and it's big. It's hard to remember everything. A major offensive in Afghanistan and, of course, Iraq. We're starting to move troops out of cities in Iraq and seen in spike in violence in that country. Is this president going to have both of those issues to deal with for the majority of his term, do you think?
Yeah, I don't see either one of those countries being successfully solved, you know, in the short time frame of 4 years. The American troops have pulled out of the big cities in Iraq, but the American military is still going to have a significant presence there, and it's probably waiting for the Iraqis to ask for assistance and to continue the forces there after the time they're supposed to all be out. So the president campaigned on getting American troops out, and it's becoming American combat troops and some of them and reducing them. But I think the reality is that they're going to be there for a while. The president campaigned on putting a lot more effort into the war in Afghanistan. And this latest offensive is, I think, the first initiative of that. But one of the political problems, I think, is that is there going to be patience in the United States for a longer-term commitment in Afghanistan? The president, you know, within his own party coalition, is he going to have support for keeping a lot of troops over there for beyond 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that it's not going to be a military victory. It seems like the kind of General Petraeus thinking about how you deal with an insurgency is taking hold. And so the American forces are going to move into these areas, and that's probably not the difficult part. But what they really are going to need to do is hold these areas, turn it over to the locals, and then do good things to inspire goodwill and confidence among the local people and to assure them that the Taliban is not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different approach to dealing with this these guerrilla type of fighters. That is, you can't really defeat them militarily. You know, you can defeat them militarily, but that's not going to be good enough. That you're going to have to win over the hearts and minds, really, of the people and their confidence, and help them build institutions and help build the central government power in these areas.
So, doing good things means doing that and then some.
Right, it's much more of a political and social challenge than it is a military challenge. And, you know, we're always, the generals and politicians are always fighting the last war, and I think, you know, you mentioned the death of Robert McNamara, you know, whose great career accomplishment was the big buildup in Vietnam. And the approach was killing as many of the enemy as possible then, but that wasn't enough to defeat the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller, and it's Ken from Oshkosh. Hello, Ken.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions for the professor. One, over a week ago, there was a story appeared in the BBC and a couple other places for only 1 day, of a gentleman caught on the border of Italy with $100+ billion of treasury bonds on him. And then the story disappeared. Now, this is enough money to set up an insurgency, to support a government, and yet we've heard nothing. Secondly, a couple months ago, BBC had a program on talking about setting the LIBOR rate for banks, and one of the gentlemen from the LIBOR organization made the statement that the rate could influence $120 trillion in total. This is absolutely insane. That's 10 to the 12th. That's more than all the grains of sand and all of the entire world. And they're talking about this as actually being monetized. What are the gentleman's thoughts on the fact that we have actually exceeded all reason when it comes to the economic sphere?
Well, I don't know. You got me on both of those. I didn't really understand what the second part of the question was about. I know that the, you know, like the caller, the things that are going on in economics, international economics, and, you know, it's mind-boggling to think of the amounts that we're dealing with. I don't know about the story about the person with the treasury bonds.
I haven't heard that story either. No. Sorry. Thank you, though, Ken. We'll be on the lookout for it in case there is a follow-up. Kelly from River Hills, hi.
Good morning. I'll preface my remarks by saying I'm a Wellstone fan and a Feingold fan. But when it comes to the media, Wisconsin Public Radio had a guy on a couple weeks ago, Charles Pierce, that wrote a book called Idiot America, How Stupidity Has Become a Virtue in the Land of the Free. And I use this in conjunction with the media. I find most of what I get on television and radio is just a lot of, you know, ideologue stuff or bantering or blather, and it seems that, you know, this is a great source of information for people of, in America to form their opinions. I don't know what your thoughts are as a professor of political science, but I just don't see what, you know, the liberal media. I can point to things like Oberman or Maddow, who I think are liberal, Chris Matthews, and that I find him just a babbling idiot. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are, where this liberal media is, and are we getting served as far as information to help us make sound decisions as, you know, a democracy, or if it's just a bunch of noise?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's plenty of media. I mean, when I was growing up, we had three TV stations and a few AM radio stations, and we had more newspapers in those days. Well, now we have access to all these things on the computer. We have all these cable TV channels and much, much more. You've had a blending of entertainment and journalism, and a lot of this, what you call ideological banter and so forth, is playing to the entertainment aspect of things. So I have to agree, there's plenty of stupidity out there, and plenty of wasted bandwidth. But there are a good source of information if you want to hunt them out, and I'm sure you're listening to one right now.
You bet.
Thank you very much, Kelly, for your call. We pause for a moment and we'll return and welcome more phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor Joseph Kunkel III, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Minnesota State University in Mankato. And this is our All Things Political segment, which you hear every Monday at 9. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, if we're going to avoid climate disaster, our guest says we're going to have to start getting a lot more direct. We'll have to start thinking about cooling the planet. And what we need to look at is geoengineering, which in the past few years has gone from being a fringe idea to the subject of intense debate in the halls of power. So he has gone from being a skeptic to an advocate. We'll talk about what that is. It's fairly controversial, and this will be after the news at 10 o'clock today. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open right now if you've been trying to get through. And we go to John from Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Hi. I wanted to go back to the topic of politicians behaving badly.
Okay.
And part of that liberal media I have to criticize, and I'm asking why the vast left-wing conspiracy in the media is giving Newt Gingrich a pass on his past infidelities. I keep hearing that he's talking about running for president, and I haven't heard anything about his infidelities that were going on at the time that he was impeaching Bill Clinton. He seems to have disappeared and gotten away with it or taken a vaccine that nobody is going to require him to discuss this at all. I remember not voting for Clinton because I saw on 60 Minutes confronting Clinton about his past problems prior to his running for president. And this liberal media that people keep talking about don't seem to want to confront Newt Gingrich on his infidelity at the time he was impeaching Bill Clinton.
Well, I don't know. What are you going to do? What are you going to keep bringing up the same things that have been brought up? I don't think it's being ignored. I think it's mentioned. It's part of the record. There's a lot out there about Newt Gingrich, and you know, I think it'll be part of the package if he decides to run for president. But
60 Minutes confronted Bill Clinton, and they've confronted him publicly. And he had to answer to that. How come Newt Gingrich is not being confronted publicly and having to answer to the public for it?
Well, he's not in a position where he has to be. He's no longer Speaker of the House. He's operating as an info journalist and giving speeches. I think if he were to hit the campaign trail, some of this stuff would come back up.
Well, I hope the liberal media takes that up.
Thanks, John, very much for the call. Is he the best hope of the Republican Party? It's early still, and heavens knows I don't want to get going on another presidential campaign. But let's spend a few minutes here talking about the Republicans, because they don't seem to have a national leader right now. If you're talking about Newt Gingrich or Rush Limbaugh or Sarah Palin, I think seems to me as though the person they may have better luck with is the governor of your state.
Well, this is just the nature of American politics. When the other party has the presidency, you don't have a national leader. I mean, it's very rare that there would be somebody that everybody would be uniting around. And so what have you got? You have your congressional leadership. Well, they don't have the majority, so they don't have the speaker, so they don't have any clear voice that's for them. They don't have a leader, and they won't have a leader until they nominate somebody. And at that point, for a few months, they'll have a leader who will either become president or not. The party out of power, you know, it usually looks like there's seven dwarves. I mean, that's what they a lot of times would say about the Democrats. Look at the, you know, none of these people look like a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's Republicans out there who can, you know, run a good campaign. I don't think Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts, has given up. And you know, if President Obama is able to pass some kind of health care reform, I'll bet Mitt Romney takes some credit for it, because Massachusetts, you know, some of the plans that are being considered are something like what Massachusetts did when he was governor.
And what about health care reform? Do you think he will be able to pass something? He's got an idea for an October deadline, which seems pretty close now.
Well, that's the $64,000 question. I mean, this is the kind of the summer that matters for President Obama. And he has a lot of initiatives, and I think health care is one of the biggest things he's pushing. It's failed repeatedly in the past, and there's tremendous pressure to get something, anything, out of Congress. So my guess will be is that something will get passed from Congress, whether it will be so compromised and watered down as to be neither this nor that, you know, that remains to be seen what it actually will be. The president's approach, I think people should pay attention to this. You think back to when Ronald Reagan was president, he identified a few key priorities. And that's sort of the conventional wisdom of how presidents should operate. But President Obama's trying to do everything at once. And also, if you go back and look at, say, Bill Clinton and the way other presidents have operated, the bills basically were written and emerged from the executive branch and then were shipped over to Congress, and that didn't work that well for the Clinton administration. So the Obama administration, with Rahm Emanuel's chief of staff there, they're saying they want action on this, but they're letting the committees in Congress work out the compromises. So Congress is really drafting the details of the bills, and the president's somewhat being criticized for not saying, I must have this, I won't sign this, and he's being very vague about what he wants. probably so that he can get something and declare victory in the end.
Yeah, but it, would it be a victory if you don't have some kind of substantial change in health care reform? If it's just little things here and there, so what?
Yeah, that's the issue, I think.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for the call. Scott from Madison is next. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. My question, and I would like to actually ask Dick Cheney this question, but the professor will have to do here. Under the Bush administration, they declared waterboarding as an acceptable form of torture. My question is, a lot of people that were in favor of waterboarding, are they declaring that that's all right for our enemies to do at this time? Because I believe that we have a serviceman that's been captured, and I really think that they purposely captured this, I believe it's soldier, I believe it's Army, to purposely just to waterboard him for that reason, that to put in basically spite for saying it's been an acceptable form of torture. And I listened to Dick Cheney talk a lot about whether it's effective or not. I don't think if it's effective or not is the question. I think is it right or not. That's just my opinion on that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, this was one of the reasons I think that Barack Obama was elected, that many Americans were offended by the use of these torture or harsh interrogation techniques. The vice president maintains that they got useful information in some cases that prevented these attacks, prevented future attacks. The president is now getting, more access to what really went on, and on some issues has shown more flexibility than he did in the campaign. I think one of the biggest arguments against using torture is that the other side is going to use it against you. However, the groups like the Taliban are not, they're not signatories to these conventions, Geneva Conventions. So those guys will be using all kinds of techniques anyway, unfortunately.
Thanks, Scott. Connie from Portage. Hi.
Yes. On torture, that isn't what I called about, but on torture, even John McCain said it doesn't work. You torture me so long and I'll tell you anything. But I'm so tired of listening to the right-wingers complain about the liberal media. I don't see it that way. I waited and waited and waited to watch something on television that had to do with the liberals. And finally, MSNBC came along. And Chris Matthews, I love. And that sort of tells you who I am. But how about Hannity? Oh, you don't think he's not an idiot? I mean, there are a lot of them. And as far as the poor Republicans, which I was all my life until George Bush got in, if my choices would be Gingrich or some of these people like Rush Limbaugh, I will never go back to the Republican Party until they get somebody. Their best shot was Romney. I thought he had class and some brains. But as you see, the Republicans didn't like him. And that's all. I'd like to hear my comments off the air.
Okay, Connie. Thanks for the call.
Well, there's liberal media out there, and there's conservative media, and people tend to be most offended by the things that they disagree with, and the things that they like, that they agree with, don't sound quite so provocative. So I think there's lots of kinds of media out there, and I think increasingly people are selecting media that reinforces what they already think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to try to expose yourself to the other point of view and call your views into question. And I like Wisconsin Public Radio here because I'm not hearing just liberal people phone in. Sometimes Minnesota Public Radio, I think I'm only hearing liberal people phone in. So, it's good that all kinds of people are listening.
Yes, they are. Mike from Appleton, we have about a minute left, everybody. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Just two quick comments. I think Obama's success is going to ride on the job market, and that really, really looks bad going forward probably for a long time. And then the second question is with regards to Iran. Ahmadinejad is now inviting Obama to have a conversation. He's just trying to legitimize himself. What do you think the Obama administration is going to do?
Well, that's tough. I mean, the Obama administration wanted to have some re-engagement with Iran, but this apparently rigged presidential election has made it really difficult, really delicate. The Obama administration is trying to take a realistic approach to foreign policy and say, well, what are our interests? It isn't just that we have a teaching function in the world to speak about democracy, but how do we protect our interests? And, you know, I think the possibility of Iran with nuclear weapons is an overriding concern.
Yeah. Professor Joseph Kunkel, thank you so much for being with us. I really enjoyed the hour. Thanks.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Our guest, Professor Joseph Kunkel III, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Minnesota State University in Mankato, covered a lot of, you know, these all things political. There's more and more and more to talk about every week, isn't there? It's amazing. Well, we thank him for being with us. All Things Political you hear on Mondays at 9 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Rob Schroeder and Jalema Noel for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up, and we'll return with another hour of conversation here on the Ideas Network.